to Food Navigator Asia's monthly podcast, the F&E Food and Beverage Trailblazers. This is a series where we speak to and get to know more about groundbreaking food and beverage firms in the Asia-Pacific region, as well as the people behind them and their stories. I am Pearly, the editor of Food Navigator Asia, and as always, I am your host for this series. Joining me today is Lina Tan, Head of Marketing and Business Development at Herbivore, a Singapore-based brand focused on developing products using proteins from pulses that has developed a range of plant-based dairy-free cheese products from cheddar to mozzarella, as well as a pea-based plant protein block. So hello, Lina. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Good afternoon, Pearly, and happy to be on the podcast. Thank you for the invitation.
Really great to have you here. And I think the first thing I'd like to start with is about Herbivore itself and your work with these cheeses. I understand you have got several products in the cheese lineup. So please do tell us more about the range.
Yeah, so Herbivore plant-based dairy-free cheese is the first, so-called proper range that we came up with. And it's really meant to provide, I would say, the most commonly consumed cheeses as a substitute or rather as an alternative to that kind of cheeses, which we commonly known as mozzarella, cheddar, as well as Parmesan. So what we aim to do is to provide a sustainably nutritious option from these conventional dairy cheese. As you know, dairy cheeses are high in carbon and water footprint. And a lot of people over the years are also concerned about the effects on health, I mean dairy's effects on health. So, having something that's sustainable for the environment and healthy for us, sustainably nutritious, becomes a very important guiding light in terms of, you know, for us for new product development. So these actually form the backbone. And the key characteristic of our cheeses is that the cheeses will contain protein extracted from pulses. Pulses are climate-friendly crops. They are known as the edible seeds of the legumes. So if you can imagine, they'll be like your fava beans, your chickpeas, your mung beans and your peas. So we use protein extracted from pulses as one of the key ingredients in our cheeses.
I understand that apart from being marketed as plant-based, these dairy-free cheeses are also highlighted, you know, as being nut-free. So is there a particular reason that Herbivore has opted to steer away from nuts as an ingredient?
Well, so when we look at nuts, right, nuts is really high on the water footprint. Mm. I think they're much lower on the carbon footprint. So when we look at the footprint, a lot of people tend to focus on greenhouse gas emissions. But the reality is that if we look at water, it takes 5,000 liters of water approximately to produce 1 kilogram of cheese. Yep. We are very extravagant. Our extravagant tastes for things that's, you know, yummy and luxurious. I mean, this is costing the planet a lot. Mm-hmm. And in a certain way, it's hard to sell the planet story. Try telling people, you know, eat this because it's good for the planet. I think it doesn't really work, especially in this part of the world. But I think the health story is also a very important one. It has to be good for the person. Mm-hmm. It has to be also something that people enjoy. They must like the taste. So we're trying to consider all these factors when we communicate our story as well.
Understand. Okay. You also mentioned, you know, it being all soy free as well. So I guess in relevance to that, you know, what are the advantages or benefits of dairy free cheeses versus using proteins from pulses, as you mentioned, you know, as opposed to soybeans? Any particular advantages in that sense?
Obviously, I mentioned just now we don't have any soy protein. Yes. That's not to say that soy protein is bad for us. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of pros and cons. I mean, a lot of people are arguing about the benefits of soy. The reality is most of the soy that's been cultivated nowadays are actually used for animal agriculture. Mm. And because, because it's so widespread, I mean, over time, you know, there are concerns. There are people who are concerned about GMO. There are people who are concerned about allergens.
Yes.
But for us, most importantly, the reason why we are staying clear is because we consider pulses a group of much more climate-friendly crops and much more nutritious in that sense. But where we also think that there is an issue is also if today you want to eat mostly plant-based diet, for example, you want to be a flexitarian, you want to eat mostly plant-based, and then you realize you're taking most of your nutrient source, your protein source from soy, because today we eat tofu, tomorrow we eat a burger, a patty, but most of the people who are making plant-based meats or patties or whatever substitutes, most of the players are using soy protein.
Yes.
So therefore, we are taking most of our nutrients from soy, which I think from a nutritional standpoint, the more you can have diversified sources of protein, I think it'll be better.
Mm-hmm. On that note, you know, where are you seeing the greatest opportunities for further expansion?
There are some countries that are very concerned about the environment. The narrative is a little different. Some countries, the health angle stands out as a much stronger reason. But we are seeing that if we consistently go on being sustainably nutritious, that's what we stand for, I think it will have a potential. We have actually run, I would say, a showcase in Dubai recently. It was, I would say, a trade show kind of event. And just to get initial feedback, it was very well received. In fact, I think the concept of having a plant-based cheese that can taste quite similar in some ways to the real one, I think it was quite well received. So the level of sustainability consciousness in countries like that is actually far superior.
Well, that's a very good sort of like shift into my next question, actually, to look a little bit broader. So do you feel that, you know, plant-based is still on trend essentially right now? You know, if yes, what are the main drivers and how can industries still best capitalize on these to sort of go bigger?
Well, I think there's still a market for plant-based. I think the challenge is, are we understanding what consumers want from a plant-based? If you look at the growth of vegans versus the growth of flexitarians, I think we are seeing a much stronger growth in the flexitarian group, where people are generally receptive to taking a larger proportion of plant-based food in their diet, as part of their diet, as opposed to previously. So people are receptive. If today I go to a restaurant, I see, oh, you know, they have plant-based menu. If it looks exciting to me, looks sounds delicious, I would order that, right? So I don't have to be a vegan per se. So, but what's the motivation really? And I think in 2020, there was a YouGov survey. And the question was asked, what is the main driver for you, you know, as a consumer when you consider plant-based? And health stood up as a very key criteria. It was like nearly 50% indicated health as the main reason. Of course, there are other reasons like, you know, concern about safety. And now Netflix, they obviously have new programs and people are wondering, are we really safe eating the meats that we're eating? So that probably helped to contribute and to propel people over. But that health thing has to stand. And if we want to be successful in plant-based, I think collectively as an industry, more and more of us have to ensure that our products will bring some form of healthy element to, whether it be like better nutrients, free from certain things, which is why, you know, we have certain criteria. Like our products, the mainstay is that we need to make sure that it contains protein from pulses, at least a certain proportion, and we have quite a good number at more than 8%. Perhaps free from, like we are free from artificial flavors and colors. So there could be certain things that the plant-based, I would say the players in the plant-based space can actually look into to appeal to consumers.
So do you still feel right now that there is still strong potential for plant-based consumption to continue growing in this region, you know, and for it to actually evolve to become really mainstream protein?
Well, I think mainstream protein, it'll take time, obviously. A lot of people tend to call this industry alternative protein. I think you hear this word a lot. I would like to call it sustainable protein. I think it's a much better way to, you know, when you say it's alternative, people always think that we don't have to embrace it. But when you tell people it's a sustainable protein, and I like to see sustainability in two ways. I like to see it as it's sustainable for our health and it's sustainable for the planet, because both are important. But if you ask me, what appeals to a regular consumer is health, right? So you have to speak to the people who, you know, speak to people in the way that matters to them. And to me, the products have to be able to support, and the various players in the industry have to come together to offer something like that, so that, you know, over time consumers can understand that, hey, when I hear plant-based, it doesn't always mean it's nuggets, patties, or something that has 20 ingredients or 30 ingredients in the ingredient list. People are skeptical about this. They were thinking that, I think the thought is, if we have to eat something that's so processed, then might as well just go back and eat the real thing. And the unfortunate thing is, if you eat a beef patty today, the ingredient says it's beef. Right? And you can just add some seasoning, whatever. The reality is, they didn't put that there's hormones and antibiotics that's consumed by the cows. It's not part of the ingredient list. So it looks like it's a very short ingredient list. But how do we justify that? You know, for example, for us, because when we produce a cheese, we have to write everything, right? The plant-based cheese. But for them, they just write cow's milk. What goes in there, honestly, that's why the next Netflix program is very popular. I mean, people are like kind of shocked, but I would say it's good for people to know. I would say there's a fine balance between fear-mongering and being aware.
All right, so if we come back to herbivore, what are your growth plans for the brand in this region moving forward in terms of business development?
Well, obviously, we hope that in countries in this region where cheese consumption is relatively high, it will be hopefully and you know, a product that can do well, because cheese is very different. I would say if you were to compare like for example, plant-based meat. I mean, most countries you can go and target people with plant-based meat. But cheeses, it really depends. Yes. I mean, certain markets will consume a lot more cheeses than other markets. So we need to be mindful of that. But again, having said that, Herbivore is not just a brand about plant-based cheeses. For us, as long as it is a plant-based and a sustainable product and it's made with protein from pulses, it's free from generally what we consider not so great ingredients, I think it's where we are happy to go. And in future, we should have more products in the pipeline.
Okay, now I think I'd like to switch focus a bit, find out a bit more about your own sort of entrepreneurial journey. So I know you've been with big firms like Sanofi, like BreadTalk, you know, as well as the Singapore Health Promotion Board as well. But, you know, Herbivore is a more FMCG manufacturing sort of focus. So I wanted to find out some of the biggest learning curves or challenges that have been for you when making this change.
So when I was in pharmaceutical, you know, it's really about, see, it's still what people eat, right? People consume medicine. So to me, the learnings is also, you can choose to consume medicine or you can choose to consume a healthier diet. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helps me to really be able to appreciate and to really share a good brand story for us, to bring people on the journey towards finding something that's healthier and more sustainable. We're still very much a lean startup vertical, so the ability to be agile is very important. Mm-hmm. So I think I have learned enough from big companies and small startups like my own to be able to do something here. Today, if you tell people plant-based meat, it depends whether people think that meat is unhealthy, then they'll be more receptive, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. So the same thing, do people think dairy is unhealthy, then they'll be more receptive. Otherwise, why look for an option? You tell them it's better for the planet, it doesn't quite appeal, right? So I think 20 years ago, if you tell people that dairy is not so good for you, I think people find it hard to accept because I think advertisements has been well entrenched and people have heard a lot of good things, you know, calcium, whatnot. But now if you tell people, hey, maybe it is not as healthy as we think, and that obviously Netflix does a good job to educate people. There's also many publications and many studies that's been done along the way. So I think as a group, I would say dairy is not perceived to be as healthy as before. And people are usually recognizing that, you know, we know it's not so good, but we love it. You know, I think it's that love, that feel good when you're eating dairy, that makes it hard to switch out.
And I think from a different point of view, Herbivore is a bit of a, as you mentioned, a startup vertical within a larger company, right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of that, I do wonder what are some of the more sort of unique challenges that you face in that sense?
Well, so I think, you know, so the bigger company is AgroCorp. AgroCorp is an agricultural commodity company. And that basically means that it's a company that takes crops from where it's grown, processes it, and sends it out to countries that consumes them.
Yes.
So we might be taking Canadian wheat or Canadian lentil to other parts of the world. But because the nature of the business is very upstream and it's not very, very different from food manufacturing and branding marketing of a consumer brand. So I would say there are challenges because it takes quite a lot of communication and you know, understanding alignment within the organization for everyone to understand exactly what you're doing. But the good thing is because the company is doing this and it follows logically that, see, they are very they have a vested interest in pulses, growing, you know, and doubling consumption of pulses is perhaps could be seen as a way to solve our world's most pressing problems of climate change, right? So if you think about it that way, what we are doing as Herbivore kind of reinforces what the company is doing on a bigger scale.
Is there potentially room for an upcycling message in there? Is that something you are sort of looking towards?
Well, so AgroCorp, right, produces, I mean, extracts protein from pulses. Yes. That's what we do. And we're going to do more of such work through a setup of a new facility in Johor Bahru by 2026. So with doing more of these things, right, every time we extract protein from pulses, we also look into, like, you know, there's byproducts like starches and whatnot, and we will try to use up as much of whatever we work with. So I think in that way, with minimal waste coming out of the factory, we are already valorizing or doing what's needed. Working with pulses is so important, and a recent campaign, I would say, in COP27, they announced a campaign called Beans is How, and we are part of the Beans Coalition. What it means is that Beans is How is a campaign that tells people if you can double bean consumption worldwide by 2028, they believe that the the impact on the environment will be significant.
Ooh.
And we can actually potentially help to address food insecurity as well as malnutrition. How is that possible? It's because they believe in the power of pulses. Like I mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
you know, just by planting pulses, pulses is already good for the next crop that comes.
Mm.
So crop rotation, regenerative agriculture,
mm-hmm.
everything becomes so much better if everyone consumes more. But you want people to consume more, you have to grow more.
Mm.
So then it becomes a cycle that is beneficial for us all. How to encourage people to eat more pulses? Like I said, challenging, right? Because dietary habits are difficult
mm-hmm.
to change. So that's the reason why we decided to extract protein from pulse, so that we not just use it as a raw ingredient for Herbivore's brand, we
mm-hmm.
actually can service plant-based food manufacturers in the region as well. I think
mm-hmm.
that's important, because as protein from pulses become more affordable,
mm-hmm.
then you will get more people, more food manufacturers to uptake and want mm-hmm. to use.
And more diversity
as an ingredient. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will truly have an impact.
Do you have any advice for those who are perhaps either, you know, doing this sort of working in a startup vertical within a huge company, or even those who are looking to make sort of a career change and entering the plant-based industry?
Well, I would say you really need to have passion.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to believe in this, otherwise it's difficult to,
mm-hmm.
to get in. It's always easier to sell a mainstream product that everyone is
mm-hmm.
aware. When you are in a new category, it needs education.
Mm-hmm.
You need to think out of the box. You need to forge new partnerships, which is why in the plant-based space, we actually work with a lot of people in this space
mm-hmm.
to either do events together, collaborate and work out something together. I think it's all very exciting. The only thing is you really need to work a lot harder than what is mainstream and what is well established, because it's not just about making sure people know your brand. You have to kind of, you know, educate on that whole category.
Mm-hmm.
What is sustainable protein? What is rather alternative protein? I think having that passion is important. Having that resourcefulness to overcome challenges along the way is important, because we always have challenges. I mean, if you don't have a big established manufacturing facility, you always have challenges,
mm.
whether it's production
yeah.
or whether, you know, your next new product development, other issues, how many rounds do you have to test
mm-hmm.
before you upscale production? Will there be issues along the way? So I think it's all very agile. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's how you can remain agile while growing the business and continue to still be very mindful of what the consumer wants and be very on the ground about things.
All right, directly from the voice of experience, thank you so much for joining me today, Lina. It was wonderful speaking with you.
Thank you so much, and it was a pleasure sharing as well. Thanks, Polly.
Thank you, and thank you also everyone for listening to this podcast as well, and I wish everyone a great day ahead. For Food Navigator Asia, this is Curly.